We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of Arizona Wildcats football. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment, or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, they have the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glenn and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast. I'm Justin Spears here with Michael Lev and Ryan Finley, and it is a bye week, fellas. No Arizona football this weekend, but we're getting a podcast up. How's the bye week treating you?
Good. You can tell Michael Lev has a little bit of a tan. He's a little more relaxed. The tank top and board shorts seems to be overdoing it, but you know, that's okay.
The bags under my eyes are smaller than usual, I guess, is how I would put it. But it is nice to have a bye week. It's well timed for Arizona, I think, because it's another chance to kind of reset, reassess the personnel. The way that they used their defense this past week, I felt like they knew the bye week was coming and they're like, we don't have to sub as much as we usually do. We're just going to use our best guys. I think six defenders played all 80 snaps and one of them played 79, which that's not going to happen as we get into the meat of the season here where they play six, seven games in a row, before bye number three.
Right. In football, there's no feeling quite like a win before a bye. Right. And there's no feeling quite as bad as a loss before a bye. And a month into Arizona's football season, we've experienced both. Right. The Hawaii game led to a week of kind of panicking, I think, among fans and among certain watchers of the program. And then to win the way they did in kind of a surprising way and then get a week to kind of bask in that. I think that's a very good thing for a football program that I think needs some confidence heading into Pac-12 play.
And is a big part of that their next opponent, UCLA, next weekend?
Hell yeah. I mean, absolutely. There is a real chance that this team can be 3-1. And had we said that, I mean, I know we've been talking about that on this podcast.
Yeah.
But had you said that August 25th, people would have laughed at you, right? I mean, to be 3-1, 1-0 in conference play, and then who do they play in week two, Pac-12 play?
At Colorado.
At Colorado. It's a winnable game. Winnable. It's a tough game.
Can I squint and go, they could be 4-1 and 2-0 in conference play, and it wouldn't necessarily surprise me.
You can definitely do that. The challenge, as I mentioned, I think, on your radio show, Justin, on Monday, for the coaching staff, especially during this period, is to keep the guys sharp, to make sure that they remember that it was what kind of preparation they needed to pull off that win against Texas Tech, to not take UCLA lightly. If UCLA goes up to Washington State and gets blown out, which I think a lot of us believe is what's going to happen there, 19-point underdogs in that game, you worry a little that they'll just think they can just show up, you know, a week from Saturday and beat UCLA, which that's a dangerous mindset to have. You need to really attack this whole week as if you're playing the best team in the conference. And that's really how you have to approach every game, of course, but it's always a little dangerous when you're coming off this big kind of emotional win. Mm-hmm. And then you have a week off. And there's a lot of everyone telling you how great you are. So I'm sure that, you know, Kevin Sumlin and his staff will be aware of that, and they'll be trying to push those motivational buttons right. Throughout the week.
One plus for them, too, is as we've seen all of Arizona's coaches that hit the road to recruit, Kevin Sumlin included, must be a little bit easier to go recruit coming off of a win against Texas Tech, especially if you're going into Texas to recruit. That'll help.
Yeah, and I don't think they actually could do that after the Hawaii game, because it was still August. Mm-hmm. And I think that the rules are such that you can't go on the road to recruit in August. So they couldn't even take advantage of having the weekend off to get out there on the road the first time. But now, of course, you know, it fits in really nicely.
Looking back at that Texas Tech game, guys, what was something that jumped out to you when you look at the Wildcats on defense? Because the first two games,
you know, you lose to Hawaii, you give up 45 points to the Rainbow Warriors. Then the next game, yeah, you beat NAU pretty handily, but you also give up 41 points. I think the big thing that I took away out of the defense was the use of the linebackers. And Lev, you went back and saw the film. What did you see out of Colin Schooler, Anthony Pandy, and Tony Fields?
Yeah, I mean, three of your best 11 players, right?
Well, they always said Anthony Pandy was a co-starter.
Yeah, and he didn't start. And
coaches say that.
Because he played the same position as Tony Fields, but they were, I think they just came to realize, you know, we have to get all three of these guys on the field. And what I like about them is all three of them can do everything. They can all rush the passer. They can all play in pass coverage. It just gives you a lot of versatility. You can send one guy off of one side on one play or the other guy off the other side another play. You can check from a blitz into a zone. When, you know, the other teams, when they look to the sideline, you can look over to your sideline. You can check out of that, and everyone's kind of aware of what they're supposed to do. I want to say that remember Jace Whitaker's pass breakup on one of the third downs? It was a pass that came to the near side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was one of those plays where, you know, Texas Tech looked to their sideline to get a new play, and then Arizona looked to their sideline to get a new play. And I think they checked into zone. And then all of a sudden, boom, Jace Whitaker's there to almost intercept the pass. If he had grabbed it, it might have been a pick six. Mm-hmm. But you're just getting a lot of versatile, smart athletes, on the field. And when you do that, you know, that can lead to good things.
I think when you're a program that's in the position Arizona is in, positional versatility is huge. Cause they're not going to have, let's say, two full teams worth of talent, right? So, you know, if you played what, six guys? 80 snaps or more?
I believe so, yeah.
Six guys, 80 snaps or more. The fact that those guys are versatile means that they can stay on the field instead of bringing somebody else in. It also means that Arizona can kind of mask what they're trying to do a little bit better. You know, God bless Rich Rodriguez. But when he was coaching this team, when he brought certain packages onto the field, you knew, and, you know, and we were just kind of observers. We knew what was coming, right? When they brought certain positional groups on the field defensively, you knew exactly what they were trying to prevent. With this, you can mask things a little bit better, and it adds sort of a depth to your team that I'm not sure Arizona's had in a while, yeah, and that's a good sign.
Without the actual bodies.
Right.
Which, like I said, can be kind of dangerous down the road because the meat of the schedule is hitting here. They're playing several weeks in a row. You're not going to be able to get away with playing guys 80 snaps a game. I don't think it's something they want to do. But to your point, Ryan, like, I don't even know how to describe the position that Jace Whitaker played in this last game. I think he technically was listed as the Bandit safety, but he's a cornerback.
Right.
And he played, you know, corner against the slot receiver, which is a prominent part of a lot of these spread type offenses. And sometimes, though, he would be back in a traditional deep safety position. There was one play on the near sideline where it was he and Lorenzo Burns double teaming the receiver. And I'm going to venture to say that that's never happened
ever
in their careers because they're always on the opposite side, from each other. So, really some interesting wrinkles. I give the coaching staff a lot of credit for coming up with this stuff kind of on the fly.
Jace Whitaker, I think, is going to be playing more that position, right? Cause if you want to get your best 11 guys on the field, you have to look at that Texas Tech film. Mm-hmm. You have to have Jace Whitaker in that position. And it's unfortunate because the story of Tristan Cooper is so great. You know, he started a few games as a freshman, then things kind of, you know, backed up a little bit, and then he gained Marcel Yates' trust back, got back into the starting lineup, and now his job is taken away. I think it's unfortunate for a guy like Tristan Cooper.
I'm not sure that...
Because he's still a big part of his defense.
I'm not sure we're going to see this same look for every single opponent. I think it might be, you know, somewhat game plan specific. Like when they play Washington or they play Arizona State, you might see more quote unquote, you know, box type players out there. And Tristan Cooper, he's a box safety. That's what he is. His strength is, you know, coming up and being physical in the run game or the short passing game. Covering guys downfield is not what I would say is his best asset. That's where someone like Jace Whitaker comes in handy. I do think we're still going to see some more four-man line. We saw, I think it was three-man line the entire game, unless you count, you know, Anthony Pandy or Tony Fields or Colin Schooler as the fourth lineman. We will see more of that, I think, depending on the opponent. But if you just look at look at it from the perspective of who are our best 11 defenders. Let's get them on the field. They obviously think Anthony Pandy's one of them, and they obviously think Christian Roland Wallace is one of them too, because he was a regular, and his ability to play on the outside is partially why they're able to move Jace Whitaker to the inside.
So who's Arizona's best three defensive linemen then? Jalen Harris, J.B. Brown, and Trayvon Mason in the middle?
It's weird that you mentioned J.B. Brown. He's someone who I had really high expectations for coming into the year. My countdown of MVPs, I think I had him third or fourth, like super high. Really hasn't had a huge impact this year. Wasn't a starter this last game. Was really kind of part of the second unit that didn't play nearly as much. It was Trayvon Mason, Fenton Connolly, and Jalen Harris were the main three guys, and then they would rotate in different groups. I still think that JB can have an impact this year and that he will. Maybe he's still kind of learning his way as far as being an inside pass rusher, you know. Maybe it's not as easy as everyone thought it was going to be. I think he's a big time talent. I think he's a pretty smart player. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say for sure Jalen Harris, he'd be number one. Trayvon Mason might be number two on that list just based on their production so far this year.
He was close to a sack. Did he sack the quarterback, but it was a little bit in front of Trayvon Mason?
Trayvon Mason. He had a tackle for loss in the game. He had four stops. He was in the backfield a lot, which is all you want to see. I mean, I've written about this before. Sacks are not the end-all be-all. You like to have them, of course. But what you want to see is
quarterback running.
Pressures. You want to see backfield penetration. You want to see disruption. And we saw a good bit of that against Texas Tech, a lot of times with only three rushers and sometimes four. And what I don't understand, and maybe you guys can shed some light on this, is why did those defensive linemen look so slow getting off the ball at Hawaii and look so fast getting off the ball against Texas Tech? I mean, it's the same guys, basically. I mean, is it the turf, the humidity? Are they in better shape now? Is that possible?
And it's also first game as well. Right. You have first game jitters. You're shaking off the rust because you're so used to practice all the time. Sure, you do, you know, scrimmages, but you're going up against the same guys every single time. These are new bodies. They haven't had a game in over a year or close to a year. So I think it was just them getting off the rust for game one.
And I think with Mason and Miles Tapasoa, the conditioning is really a big factor. There was a play at the end of the first half. It was a bubble screen. The very last play of the first half. And Miles Tapasoa ran probably 20 yards across the field to get in on the tackle. And I'm going to say,
which wouldn't have happened a month ago.
He literally, like, physically could not have done that a month ago.
Well, you remember Kevin Sumlin said at the start of the season, when I asked him, hey, what do you think about the progress of Miles Tapasoa? He said, you know, when he first got here, you guys always wondered, you know, where is he at? Well, he's gone because he's tired. That's how out of shape he was. He couldn't make it through warmups because he was so out of shape. And then now he's running 20 yards to make a play.
Another benefit of bye weeks, by the way, is you can spend a lot of that bye week just working on conditioning.
True.
So now we've got a second one. So they should be in really good shape physically heading into that UCLA game.
Can we talk about Fenton Connolly just real quick?
Sure.
I think I took journalism classes with him at the U of A in 2002. This guy's been here forever. What does that say about him? I mean, that he's been able to play. I mean, certainly it's been the same. You know, he's been playing for Marcel Yates, basically, but to play for a couple of head coaches, to play when they're emphasizing different things and to still find his way on the field without a lot of fanfare, I mean, that's pretty impressive to me.
Loyal soldier.
Yeah.
You know, a Wildcat through and through. I think the comment that Coach Yona made about Fenton during the preseason was that he just does his job.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to worry about him. He's not going to blow an assignment or jump out of a gap. And that's valuable.
You need guys like that.
You do. Yeah. You do. He's not going to be a guy who stuffs the stat sheet. I think he had one, was credited with maybe one tackle against Texas Tech, but it's nice to have some veteran savvy out there, some leadership, some stability, especially like right in the middle of your defense.
Now shifting over to the offensive side of the ball, Khalil Tate apparently became the first quarterback the second quarterback in Pac-12 history. The other one was Marcus Mariota to throw for 5,000 yards and rush for 2,000 yards.
Yeah.
A very good company for Khalil Tate, considering a very roller coaster career at Arizona.
They actually used a roller coaster graphic at the beginning of the ESPN telecast.
Really?
In describing the trajectory of Khalil Tate's career. Right. I think you would have approved. Did you see that, Ryan?
Yeah.
You enjoy a good graphic, don't
you? I do. I love me some graphics. I mean, imagine the number of games he played, too. I mean, this is not a kid. Mariota, and tell me if I'm wrong, Michael Lev, but I mean, Mariota showed up and was the man and played basically three full seasons, didn't he?
I don't have that information in front of me, but sure, that sounds right.
I believe Marcus Mariota showed up and was the man right away. For Khalil Tate to do what he's been able to do, given the way his career started, given the injuries that he's overcome, you know, again, people seem to judge him on a curve, right? Is you saw what he was capable of two seasons ago, and you wonder why he's not like that every day. Fact remains that he is a very talented quarterback in the Pac-12, and with counting stats, like we talk in baseball about counting stats, right? With counting stats, yards, completion percentage, you know, those kinds of things, he's incredible, and he matches up well with most great quarterbacks in the country. You know, I think that the critiques of him have been fair, but you know, I think that people who criticize him tend to overlook the fact that he is just single-handedly responsible for chunks and chunks and chunks and chunks of yards every Saturday.
Marcus Mariota was a three-year starter for Oregon, playing 13-13 in 15 games. And Khalil Tate became the starter, what, five games into his sophomore year, missed a couple games, one full game, and then most of another game last year. Hasn't even come close to completing this third season yet. Well, so when you look at it that way.
Greg Hansen wrote, I think, on Saturday that last Saturday was his 20th start or 21st start at Arizona. That would have put Marcus Mariota midway through his sophomore season.
Yeah, that's not a crazy amount.
Wow.
Yeah. I think I heard that there's only two active, Power Five quarterbacks who've had that 5,000, 2,000. Mm-hmm. And it's, Khalil and Jalen Hurts. He might do that this season alone.
He did that against UCLA last week.
In the first half.
Brian, you were covering Nick Foles when he was here at Arizona.
Sure. He did not rush for 2,000 yards.
No.
No.
What do you, at this point right now, let's just say Khalil Tate, you know, he does what he did last Saturday against Texas Tech. He does that on a weekly basis. How do you think Khalil Tate's going to be remembered at Arizona?
Oh man, probably, well, statistically among the greatest quarterbacks they've ever had. Maybe the greatest. Nick Foles. What's so interesting when you talk about the story of Nick Foles is the narrative, right? Is Nick Foles was this backup quarterback who played terribly in practice, right? Was not a good practice player and kind of was forced into a situation when Matt Scott got hurt, came in and the offense came alive, right? And we see that in college football and in the NFL all the time, right? A new guy comes in, he does different things better and the offense comes alive. The narrative that he kind of, you know, walked from out of the cornfield and all of a sudden was Arizona's all-time leading passer, really made him beloved, as did the fact that, frankly, he went to the NFL and won a Super Bowl. In that regard, I think Nick Foles will be kind of up here. I'm reaching really high when we talk about the greatest Arizona quarterbacks of all time. Statistically, though, I think Khalil Tate, by the time he finishes his career here, will surpass Nick Foles. I think that we can talk about him having a skill set and the ability to do it all that's unlike anybody Arizona's ever had.
And is that because of national relevance? Because Nick Foles had Arizona on College Game Day.
Well, yeah.
They were a top 10 team at one point.
Nick Foles won more games. But Nick Foles, keep in mind, was also Arizona's starting quarterback when everybody got fired.
Yeah.
So, no, I just think that, you know, it's hard to compare it. It's apples and oranges. But Khalil Tate will be the most maybe complete quarterback Arizona ever had by the time he's done here.
His legacy to me is still to be written. You know, can they have a winning season this year? Can they beat Arizona State? Can they win a bowl game that people care about? If he does all of those things and continues on the same statistical pace, he might go down as the best quarterback in Arizona history when you consider the full resume. But if they again lose to Arizona State, he'd be 0-3 against the arch rival. You don't know how that impacts whether they make the postseason. So, you know, I think the numbers are going to be there, but how you really feel about his career here will depend on how things finish up at the end of this season.
Right. Can I go way off on a tangent here?
Sure.
With Khalil Tate.
Love
you're
tangents.
You're the boss, man.
It's a podcast. We love tangents.
When Nick Foles went into the NFL, there were some questions about how his skill set would fit in the NFL, right? Big guy, kind of a lumbering guy. I mean, really, if we're talking comparisons, like kind of Ben Roethlisberger without the super great arm strength and 60 pounds, right? I mean, kind of a big guy who could stand in there and make throws. Khalil Tate will enter an NFL that I think is now being defined by Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. That has to benefit him.
When you look at what's going on in Baltimore, look at the rise of Lamar Jackson, who thought he would ever be the starting quarterback in the NFL.
Well, my fantasy team did. But yes, outside of that, Michael Lev, I mean, Khalil Tate, whether he graduates, whether he leaves Arizona with a winning record or a win over ASU or a bowl victory, I think Khalil Tate is going to get a long look in the NFL simply because of the skill set he brings.
I think, you know, if he had come out 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, you know, it would have been this quick transition to you're going to be a slot receiver, kind of like Braxton Miller, let's say, or even Terrell Pryor.
Sure. They tried that with Lamar Jackson, keep in mind.
Well, okay, it was discussed. Okay, I mean, he pushed back on it, and rightfully so. He's turned out to be a pretty darn good quarterback. But just in terms of his skill set and the direction that the NFL is headed, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. There are other elements to being a quarterback in the NFL, some areas like leadership, how you handle yourself off the field. I got to say, I've been impressed with the way that Khalil has handled himself in the post-game interview settings so far this year.
Wearing a hat.
I don't know, whatever. Like Greg Hansen wrote almost an entire column about that hat, by the way. But he just, he's taking more of a leadership role, which he should. I think he still has a ways to go in that regard. And maybe it's just not natural for him. It's not natural for everybody. You know, there's a lot more to playing quarterback successfully in the NFL than just having a strong arm and being able to run really fast. But
good starting place.
But
though.
It is a good starting place, and coaches are just more open to the idea of that style of player and being able to build an offense around them rather than, you know, this is the way we've always done things in the NFL. You got to play from the pocket, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and you look around the league, not everybody has those skill sets, right? And so it would stand to reason if you're the Chicago Bears and if you're looking for somebody who can be a backup to Mitch Trubisky, let's say, would you rather have a Chase Daniel, who is currently their backup quarterback and older than me and a sort of traditional quarterback? Or would you rather bring in a young guy who can do stuff like that? As the league expands to bring in more of these players who are dual threats, you're going to need to back them up with more dual threat guys, because if your starter gets hurt, you can't change your offense, right? You want to be able to implement that system top down. I think that that's going to mean, I will predict right now, regardless of what Khalil Tate does between now and the end of the year, he is on somebody's NFL roster a year from today.
As a quarterback?
As a quarterback.
Absolutely.
As a quarterback.
Interesting. All right. We'll see.
Since we have about 10 minutes left here with the podcast, interesting slate of Pac-12 games for this weekend. So we're going to go ahead and do our Pac-12 pick-ems, starting with Friday night's matchup. I think this is my favorite one of the week. Utah, number 10 in the country, playing USC in the Coliseum.
Right. It's a tradition unlike any other, right? It's a Utah-USC playing on a weeknight. Seems like it happens every year. Seems like Utah wins every time. I think that they're going to win again.
In the Coliseum.
This may be Clay Helton's Waterloo. It's a dated reference. I'm sorry. This may be, I mean, if Utah comes into the Coliseum and beats the pants off of USC, I mean, is Clay Helton still there in a week?
It's a good question. You know, they obviously made the move with the athletic director. The problem is, if you do that, then you're in this sort of interim coach situation. You don't have the AD in place.
It's messy.
Right. It's very messy.
Right. Who would even fire him?
I don't think Utah is going to blow the doors off of USC, but I do think they'll win a close game because they just do the little things better than USC does. You know, they're not going to commit that costly turnover at the end of the game. They're going to have sound special teams. They're going to be physical at the line of scrimmage. They're going to manage, you know, Kyle Whittingham's probably going to manage the game better than Clay Helton is going to, frankly. The spread is 3.5. I think I might take those points because it's, you know, you get the bump over the field goal, and it wouldn't surprise me if Utah won by 2 or 3, but I do think that the Utes are going to pull this one out. And if they do, the path is pretty clear for them in the South. The only game where you're really concerned, where they're probably going to be an underdog, is at Washington later in the season. I think they're going to be a favorite in every other game they play this year.
Can we talk about optics real quick?
Sure.
If Utah comes into the Coliseum, plays manly man football, and beats USC that way, right? I mean, this is what USC sort of hung its hat on for 100 years until 9 months ago. If they come in and run the ball and play good defense and play good special teams, does that accelerate the belief that Clay Helton is not the guy? If USC tries to finesse it against Utah, if they get out USC'd by Utah, isn't that even worse?
But that happened last year up there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's new necessarily. And when you commit to the air raid offense, you are sort of making that concession. Mm-hmm. In a way, and it's going to depend on whoever the new athletic director is and what sort of vision they have for the program. If they feel like, hey, we're USC, we need to get back to what, you know, made USC a power for so many years, you know, which is, you know, like run left and run right and have all the best tailbacks on the West Coast and the best mm-hmm. offensive linemen, and that sort of thing. You know, it would be good. Everyone always talks about how it's better for the Pac-12 if USC is good, but it would be bad for the Pac-12 if Utah lost this game.
Yeah,
because they're
the only chance right now.
Kind of the only hope remaining for the playoff. I mean, it's still possible that Oregon, if they ran the table if their only loss all year was Auburn in a neutral site mm-hmm. game, I think that would be looked upon pretty favorably by the committee. Washington's got a tough
but that's a uphill road. That's a fluky loss that I think you could explain away in December if they run the table the rest
you can't,
of the way.
You can't, but can you really explain a fluky loss to Cal, to the college football playoff committee?
On September 1st? Yeah, I think you can. And I don't know. Keep in mind, too, I mean, we would assume Washington runs the table. That means Washington would have beaten Washington State.
Yeah, and Utah.
And Utah.
Hey, good segue, by the way. Cal and Ole Miss. When you wake up Saturday morning from Oxford.
I love this. It's a rematch or not a rematch.
It is a rematch. No, they played either last year or 2 years ago.
I think it was last year.
In Cal. Yeah.
This is also Charlie Ragle with Cal, former special teams coach for Arizona, and Rich Rodriguez, offensive coordinator.
Yep.
Everyone's coming back together.
It's a reunion.
Reunion.
Yeah.
Cal versus Ole Miss in Oxford. Cal's in SEC country.
I'm going to take Ole Miss in this one because it's always hard for a Pac-12 school to go across the country, number one. Number two, to play in that early time slot. You know, 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. Pacific time kickoff. You know it's going to be humid.
It's going to be sticky.
Yeah. Cal has got elements to their game that travel well. You know, Herm Edwards says, you know, defense and running game. Put them in a suitcase. You know, that they'll travel for you. So I think it'll be a close game, but I think home field and the travel element give the edge to Ole Miss to me.
Yeah, I would pretty much always pick a Southeastern Conference team playing at home. Pretty much.
That's it.
Pretty much.
That's why with Pete Carroll back in the day, remember he would take some of his USC teams out there and then USC would just kill.
Yeah.
They would just kill them because, well, you know, that was Pete Carroll. Yeah. And they were special.
I'm going to go with Ole Miss as well. It's tough to pick against the SEC. Mm-hmm.
By the way, I saw a headline. I didn't read the story. Shame on me. But I saw a headline that Justin Wilcox takes the BART to work.
Really?
Day. Yeah.
Public transportation.
Yeah. That's interesting. I love Justin Wilcox. He just is such a good fit for Cal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he was the defensive coordinator at USC, and I was always super smart, mm-hmm. like interesting guy to talk to, but I didn't think he was a good fit for SC because that's sort of like you've got the best athletes. Let's have a real simple defense and mm-hmm. roll things out there. He's got these really smart kids at Cal. He could probably put in some NFL-level schemes. And just it's a good fit, him for them and them for him.
Especially after Sonny, God love Sonny. Sonny was just such a bad fit for them.
Sonny Dykes. What do you remember about him at Arizona?
Oh, he was great. He was awesome. All of the Nick Foles stuff was Sonny Dykes, man. Oh yeah, I mean it was that offense. It was Sonny Dykes was great, but Sonny Dykes is the most Texas human being I've ever met in my life. My God, he couldn't be more. His name is Sonny Dykes. So he is where he belongs.
Did he say program?
Program. He says program. Sonny Dykes is where he belongs, which is making a stack of money coaching in the state of Texas.
All right, transitioning to Washington versus BYU in Provo. Big shout out to Norma Gonzalez, our former colleague. Last week she was at the USC-BYU game, which ended in thrilling fashion. Now she gets another Pac-12 game.
Norm is the smartest one among us. She's gotten two straight 12:30 kickoffs. Meanwhile, over here, you know, 7:30, 7:30, 7:30. So
interesting game for Washington.
Yeah, it is, because we've seen how tough BYU can be. Mm-hmm. You know, they won at Tennessee. They beat USC last week, another home game. This is sort of the prove it game in a way for me for Washington, because they've blown out the two teams they should blow out, and they lost at home to a decent opponent in Cal. I still believe in Washington. I think they're going to go to Provo and win by a touchdown or two.
Agree. I think I picked USC to beat BYU, so I was certainly wrong there. But again, this is Washington. Washington needs to prove that loss to Cal was a fluke. The, you know, lightning delay, 1:30 in the morning finish, overtime, all that stuff, whatever it was. To me, this is Washington's sort of make it or break it game. And I mean, this is a Washington team that still has its sights set on the college football playoff, on winning the league. Washington needs to win this game. And I think that they're more desperate. And as we learned, the more desperate team usually wins.
I'm going to go with BYU once again over the Pac-12. I got BYU winning 21-17.
Does BYU, low scoring game. Does BYU have more Pac-12 wins in the last 5 years than Oregon State?
Perhaps. I would say so, yeah. Because they beat Arizona, beat USC. Mm-hmm. Who else have they beaten?
A bunch of teams.
It's probably more than Oregon State.
Probably Oregon State. I know that both Hawaii and San Diego State, I believe, had more Pac-12 wins the last 2 years than Oregon State did.
Moving on. Let's look ahead to Oregon versus Stanford. Another interesting matchup. This one is in Palo Alto. Who do you guys have in this one?
Well, I want to just revisit something from the last podcast where I had suggested to you guys, and you dismissed me, Stanford was that was sort of the beginning of the end, or that they were headed toward a decline of some degree. You know, maybe not toward where Stanford was back in the day, but maybe not at that same level where they're winning, you know, 9, 10, 11 games every year. And then they went to UCF and it was not even competitive. I mean, they got completely blown out. Now all of a sudden they're, you know, a 10.5-point underdog at home against Oregon in a game where, you know, before the year you might have thought that this would be like a game day type of matchup. So this is an interesting time for Stanford. Like, where is this program headed? You know, are they going to fall sort of back into that middle class of the Pac-12? Are they still going to be among the elite? Big test for them. I don't have a lot of faith in them the way that they're playing right now. I think it will be a competitive game. I think they're going to give Oregon their best shot, but I think Oregon's got more talent, more speed, and that they're going to pull it out.
I think Oregon wins, but Stanford covers. How about that? I think it's closer than 10 and a half.
Sure.
Do you remember last year's game between these two teams, 38-31 in overtime?
Yep, that was the game that Oregon should have taken a knee and ran the ball anyway. Yes.
Looking at the stats from that game, Justin Herbert had over 300 yards rushing or passing, and then they had a true freshman running back, C.J. Verdell, who had over 100 yards rushing. Both of those guys are back this year. They look pretty good. I like them on the road against Stanford. Looking ahead to other Pac-12 matchups, Colorado versus number 24 ASU. Did you guys ever think at this point on September 19th in 2019 that ASU would be ranked?
I think one of the great...
With a true freshman quarterback, mind you.
I think one of the great miscalculations in the history of Pac-12 football is the group of people, and I count myself among them, who lined up and went, Herm Edwards, what are we doing? Right? Who sat there and went... Because ASU sold it as this new leadership model. I think that most observers rolled their eyes at it. And then Herm Edwards went out and surrounded himself with really good people. And he's brought in even somebody like a Marvin Lewis to help. And they play, I think, structurally sound, fundamentally sound, it travels with you kind of football. And that's impressive to me is, you know, ASU has forever been kind of the sleeping giant. And Herm Edwards is getting them closer and closer and closer to actually delivering on that promise.
And Herm has the right people around him. Yeah. Like Antonio Pierce, he's coaching linebackers, but he's probably their best recruiter right now with the Long Beach Poly ties. And he's going into Southern California, getting all these guys to buy into what they're building at ASU.
Yeah, ASU has a plan. And I'm not sure that I would have guessed that when he was hired. That said, I think it's going to be tough on Saturday. Colorado can match them kind of physical for physical. I think that Colorado also seems to have a plan and a direction. under Mel Tucker here in year one. So I think it's going to be tight. I like the Sun Devils because if you can go to East Lansing, Michigan and beat Michigan State, you could probably beat Colorado too. But I think it's going to be tight.
And they gave their kicker a scholarship after that game too.
Zendejas. Little Zendejas. It's Alex's cousin.
How many Zendejas are there? A lot.
Yes.
Lev, what do you got? I think Colorado's going to win the game. Yeah. My upset special of the week. Arizona State obviously has played really well in a lot of ways, but they're pretty fortunate to have won that game at Michigan State. Their offense is really not clicking mm-hmm. at the moment. They're not running the ball as well as they want to or they did last year. At some point, that's going to catch up with them. You know, Jaden Daniels has proven to be savvy beyond his years, a good playmaker, made some pretty good decisions toward the end of that game to run instead of trying to force the ball into coverage, getting some first downs or just, you know, getting them into position where they could put some points on the board. But I just think the lack of offense is going to catch up with them at some point. I like the talent on this Colorado team. They've got a senior quarterback who's not going to be intimidated by the venue at all. And I just think coming off that really, you know, emotional, what felt like a breakthrough win last week, that ASU might be a little vulnerable psychologically heading into this one. The game's in Tempe.
Okay. Yeah. So my take that if ASU can win in East Lansing, they can certainly win in Boulder. That doesn't really fly, does it?
No, it does not.
Okay. But though, if they were in Boulder on Saturday, they'd probably win. You know, cause
you like the Sun Devils.
Empty stadium.
Oh, true. Go, oh, jeez, Louise.
I'll be over here. I'm sorry.
This is a tough game. I'm with Lev, though. I like the upset special. I think LaVisca Chenault, Steven Montez, two underrated guys, one of the most underrated duos in the Pac-12, would you say?
Montez is certainly underrated. I think Chenault gets a lot of love, but Montez, I like Montez, and physically there's not a lot he can't do.
He's another guy that seems like he's been there for six plus years. He's got to be such a maddening prospect for the NFL scouts to watch because like he'll make an unbelievable throw downfield, and then the next play he just won't see anyone open and he'll hold another ball and take a sack. He's got all the physical traits you could want. I really like his personality too, but I'm not quite sure it's going to all add up to, you know, the NFL prospect that you think he could be just based on the measurables.
What separates, just in terms of measurables, what separates he and Justin Herbert though?
Not much. I think Herbert is a little bit better athlete. I think he can do a little bit more damage with his legs, but they're both big, strong-armed guys. So I don't think physically that there's that much that separates them.
And winning percentage-wise, it's not a huge gap. I mean, it's not as if Justin Herbert has led his team to the Rose Bowl, right? I mean, neither.
I like where Ryan's going with this.
Yeah, I don't know. He's sort of 85% of Justin Herbert, maybe?
You're suggesting Justin Herbert is overrated a little bit.
I'm suggesting that.
Which doesn't, by the way, doesn't mean that he's a bad player, but it might mean that we're overestimating him and underestimating Steven Montez.
I'm saying Steven Montez is like 80% Justin Herbert. That's okay. Nothing wrong with that.
Looking ahead to the final Pac-12 game for this weekend, Arizona's opponent for next week, UCLA. They're on the road in Pullman against Washington State. Nice 7:30 kickoff on ESPN. So Pac-12 once again is on national TV on ESPN, but it's super late at night. And is it safe to call Washington State quarterback you? At this point,
how many of them are starting this upcoming weekend?
Two.
Right, from the NFL. Two. Yeah, two of them.
And neither of them were draft picks, I don't believe.
They were both late. Luke Falk was actually the 199th pick, which is the Tom Brady pick in his draft. And I want to say Gardner Minshew was also a six.
Right, but Luke Falk was not drafted by the Jets, was he?
No, I think it was the Titans.
Titans, okay.
Yeah, but we all thought for so long that these are all just system quarterbacks and that they're just taking advantage of Mike Leach putting them in this position to put up these video game numbers, and they haven't really – it hasn't really translated into NFL stardom or startdom even. But now that a lot of the college concepts are trickling up to the NFL, all of a sudden these air raid quarterbacks are getting a long look. You know, Patrick Mahomes obviously is a different case because of his incredible athleticism and arm strength and all that, but he's an air raid quarterback.
Sure. Sure. And so is Kyler Murray, really.
Yeah, and we have an air raid coach, you know, up the road, mm-hmm. Coaching the Cardinals now, too. So I think there's more opportunities for these guys. And now we've got Anthony Gordon. He's the latest one who's just putting up these insane numbers for Washington State. And I'd be shocked if we didn't see more of those, you know, Saturday night against UCLA.
So what you're trying to say is you like the Cougars.
I do. I'm not sure I would lay 19 and a half points. Man, that just feels like so much. I mean, I could see the game being like 34-17, in which case, you know, you cover with UCLA. I would take the points just because it's a lot.
How bad do things need to get at UCLA?
I think I said to Justin, I don't know if this was on air or off there, I think they could go 0-12 this year and nothing's going to happen. Chip Kelly will be back next year.
Right.
Obviously, if they do go 0-12, he'll be on the hot seat next year. I don't think they will go 0-12.
But it's L.A. If you go 0-12 in L.A., you start to feel the pressure from boosters.
But it's UCLA football.
I was going to say, you know what happens if you go 0-12 at UCLA? Just no one pays any attention.
Right. Nobody goes. It's not that people get mad. It's that people get
indifferent, which is sort of worse.
Oh, totally.
But doesn't that make your athletic director upset? Doesn't that make your president upset?
I think similar to Arizona, like, I don't think there's like money's just grown on trees where they can afford to fire a coach that, you know, 2 years into his 5-year deal, mm-hmm. pay him and then pay somebody else. And aren't they already doing that?
What's his buyout?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's probably large.
To me, this is the problem with expectations, right? Is when you hire a football coach, you want him to come in as Rich Rodriguez did, as Mike Stoops did, as Kevin Sumlin did, come in and talk about developing players, going to the Rose Bowl, blah, 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 blah. I think Chip Kelly knew kind of upon taking this job that they were a mess. This is where being honest, I think, would help. If you sit there and you go, we're tearing this thing down and we are starting from scratch and see you in 2021. I pay somewhat close attention to UCLA. To me, they're a mess. I mean, it's not as if they're a quarterback away at this point, right? To me, this is where being honest with your fans, honest with the media, honest in terms of expectations would really help, which is my very long-winded way of saying I think Washington State kills them, because I think if UCLA couldn't cover, 15.5 or something at home against Oklahoma. Now, Oklahoma's good, but I don't think that they have a chance on the road.
Now, UCLA, they rank 93rd in college football in plays per game. Does that gauge your tempo and how fast your offense is, or is that more so the other team stopping your offense?
I think it's your defense not being able to get off the field, too.
Yeah.
It's both. It's not being able to extend drives. You're talking in plays per game. But he also has pushed back when people have suggested to him, like, why aren't you running
the blur? Why haven't we seen the Oregon offense?
Yeah, why aren't you running the same offense? And he's like, well, you know, that was then. This is now. We're doing things differently. So
he said, you know, they also ran the wing T in the 1930s. Is that what he said?
Yeah. By the way, that thing. So basically what he said is that thing you hired me for, I'm not doing anymore.
I think they hired him to win.
Okay.
You know,
well, so he's not doing that.
We're not seeing it.
We're not seeing that either. Again, all due respect to Dorian Thompson Robinson, I'm just not sure he's that guy. And until they get that guy, I'm not sure they can really run that offense.
Right. Do you know when they went to Cincinnati in week one, that they carried 6 quarterbacks with them to Cincinnati, and Dorian Thompson Robinson played every snap? To me, that's scary, because Dorian Thompson Robinson has not been any good, but I believe he's played pretty much every meaningful snap, hasn't he?
For the most part. I don't remember any other quarterback getting in.
Not this year.
Right.
That I can recall. I don't know. I don't know what the pipeline looks like as far as that next guy. It's kind of interesting. UCLA is not, I wouldn't say, a blue blood in college football, but as far as talent goes in the Pac-12, I mean,
they're not struggling recruiting wise.
Definitely upper echelon, right? They're going to get better players. Their roster 1-85, I'm sure, has more raw talent on it than Arizona's does. Let's just say, for example, but they're struggling, and some other teams that have traditionally been really good, like Florida State. You know, like Florida State, NFL factory, right? Like just rolling guys out. They're not what they used to be.
They lost to Virginia.
Yeah.
Virginia, who, by the way, is ranked Bronco Mendenhall can really coach. But they lost to Virginia.
They also lost to Boise State.
It's so bad that a four-year-old is outselling lemonade because he wants to contribute to the buyout of Willie Taggart's contract. Right? You didn't know that?
That's everything. Wow. That's everything that's wrong with everything right there.
That little kid is selling lemonade because he doesn't want you to be the Florida State head coach anymore.
He wants to see the coach fired. That's welcome to Florida.
That's awesome. Yeah. So we all can agree Washington State's winning on Saturday?
Yes. But I'll take the points.
I will take Washington State to cover the points.
Okay. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. We'll be back next week. Arizona takes on UCLA. Lev, what time is that kickoff again?
7:30.
Nice. Pac-12 After Dark. Make sure you subscribe to the Wildcast Podcast on Apple Podcasts and download the Wildcaster app. It's free and it's available on the App Store and Google Play. For Ryan, for Lev, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.